Hi, I'm Chris Gordon, the host of Abounding Grace Radio. I'm also the pastor of the Escondido United Reformed Church. If you are local to Southern California and live near the Escondido area, we would love to see you at one of our worship services on Sunday. We worship at 9:30 a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m. at the Escondido United Reformed Church, 1864 North Broadway here in Escondido. You can find us on the web at www.escondidourc.org. EscondidoURC.org. The Escondido United Reformed Church, a place where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught.
Rightly interpreting God's Word. This is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon.
Question that anyone living today can ask and then seek to have answered is, how can a sinner stand before a holy God? The Lord is holy, supremely holy in His majesty, and He cannot tolerate any sin. And He doesn't just set aside His justice. Sometimes the Christian faith is presented that way, as if God just forgives and sets aside His justice. You see, He is just, and all sin demands a punishment. How in the world can this relationship work when God is supremely holy and we are sinners? We're looking at this great truth and answer today in the Christian faith as we go back to the book of Exodus and see that this has been taught in the Bible all along, that it is one central message of the story of the person and the work of Jesus. Thanks for tuning in today to Abounding Grace Radio. Visit us on the web at agradio.org. agradio.org. The number's 888-504-8805. 888-504-8805. Find us on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. Do please write to us. And if you do wish to support Abounding Grace, 100% of your support goes to continue to bring this radio program to you and to major population bases in the U.S., Canada, and Africa. Thanks today for tuning in to Abounding Grace Radio. The message is titled From Exodus Chapter 33, I Am With You Always. This is part one. Thanks for tuning in to Abounding Grace Radio. I've realized in our study of the book of Exodus how important it is to be challenged frequently with what we believe, why we believe it, and how it's so easy to drift from those things. Book of Hebrews warns us about drifting, to be refreshed in them and to understand them. And one of the things that we have constantly emphasized in the course of the ministry here, in the scriptures, even in our confessions, is that we are sinners. That's nothing new. It's one thing, of course, to say that, an entirely different thing to understand how it shows up and what it looks like in the course of our lives, isn't it? In other words, do we really take seriously how bad the problem is? The things that we do against the Lord, what they really deserve from Him? How serious it all is? The consequences of losing and not taking sin seriously, we're learning in the book of Exodus, are disastrous, aren't they? When that doesn't happen, as we've considered, and the message becomes, as we've considered, that everything is love, everything is encouragement, everything is a word of encouragement, everything is grace, everything is nice, everything is non-offensive, you begin to lose an appreciation of how it's even possible that God Himself dwells with you. You have to have a balance, don't you? When these truths of the Christian faith are not brought to people and to bear on their consciences in a meaningful way, in a way that's searching and trying, as David asked for, the consequences are awful. You will lose your doctrine of God. You will abandon your doctrine of sin and man. And the consequences are all kinds of false ideas and approaches to God, as we're learning here in worship, that directly contradict His will and nature and our own.
there's no longer any restraint. There's no longer any discipline, as we've considered. We don't even like to talk about the fear of the Lord, right, is the beginning of knowledge. Those sort of things are gone in our speech. Well, if there's anything we've been learning in Exodus, it's that God is supremely holy. It's all over the place. He can't tolerate sin. He won't tolerate sin. He's as intolerant as it gets when it comes to sin. And that's left us in our study of Exodus with a real dilemma. You see, they had received so far from the Lord in the Lord's deliverance nothing but help from him. He had with his strong arm brought them out of the land of Egypt, and he had put on display his great power and his great might. But what we're seeing as he brought them out is that even though they were delivered from the physical land of Egypt, Egypt is still very much a part of them. Egypt is still in their hearts. Egypt is their heart. And this has created a great problem in the relationship, hasn't it? Because the Lord has brought them out to be a worshiping people. Remember, that was the purpose, one of the purposes of the Exodus, that God would dwell with them, but that they would come out and that they would worship. And God had given them specific sets of laws to say, you can't do anymore what you did in Egypt with your old gods. You can't come to me that way. You can't treat me that way. You can't even see me that way. You can't worship me as you want. I command your worship. I determine your worship. It's a danger zone when you start doing that stuff. And this is exactly what we've been studying in Exodus. A whole conflict broke open. The greatest moment in the relationship, if you will, in terms of now coming to Mount Sinai, as had been promised to Moses, the whole issue broke open over worship. We've been looking at that. The same battle goes on today. Worship was the place where the bitterness of their hearts was most exposed. Isn't it something? Worship. It was in the act of coming before the Lord that the bitterness became really apparent. That everything about their problem came out. They did not like to worship him on his terms. And in fact, as Psalm 81 said, they wanted nothing of him. He was too, in their view, buying into the lie of the devil, too constricting, taking them nowhere. We're just stuck in the wilderness. He was hidden. Who wants to worship a hidden God? How are we supposed to know a God and commune with a God we can't see? And you start to realize, well, this is kind of what we're doing now. This is one of the most unsatisfying experiences we've ever had in life. You're calling this worship? Do you know what we enjoyed in Egypt? Do you know what we did in Egypt? This is worship? Make any sense to us? Can't touch, can't handle, can't see. Big problem for us. So they rejected him. They replaced him. Even though they slapped his name on the new God, they had created one. They built one. They built one they knew. They built one they liked. They built one that satisfied them in their view. But it's created a giant dilemma now that I keep referring to, the dilemma of these passages. If sin and idolatry are a part of us, and this is what we do, if Calvin was right that our hearts are idol factories and we keep making them all the time, if we are polluted in this kind of way, and God is just and God is holy, how's this relationship even going to work? It's really an issue, isn't it? And that's particularly what's before us this morning that Moses himself is wrestling with. You see development in Moses here in understanding law, gospel, grace, judgment, all these things. He's working, he's thinking, he's approaching the Lord thinking about these things. And it's been going back and forth in a reason to show us the struggle to give grace, if you will. To teach us about how this is possible. It's not cheap. It's not just thrown out there. And we're being really tested with understanding it, aren't we? How can God be their God and these people his people? Well, God is now beginning to unveil that. And you'll see the beauty. I'm really excited to preach this one because you see the whole story so powerfully put on display here for you. Everything you've ever learned, this is what I like to tell the children, that when you begin to understand the Bible, you have this giant book in front of you and it just begins to shrink. And you see the one story that's constantly, the Bible shrinks. And you see the one story that's put right in front of you over and over and over again. You see it this morning, this great answer of this. You see it in Moses' plea for his presence, the promise that God gives of his presence, and the place God provides for them in his presence. So you have here the plea for the presence, the promise, and you'll notice the place God provides. Last time, we left off with a dreadful statement. I am no longer going with you guys. I'm done. I can't be among you. Do you understand that, Israel? I can't be among you. Because if I am among you, I'll consume you all in a minute. It was over. And Israel, it left them, of course, in this state of mourning, realizing, what did we just do and what did we just lose? I mean, it was really a moment where they felt the weight of it all of a sudden, and now they lost everything that ever mattered in life. If you've ever seen people tank their lives and then realize what they've lost, that's a painful thing. This is the most important and painful loss. God can't be with them. He just said it. I'm not going. I'll fulfill what I said. I'll get you to the land, but I'm not going on the journey. Trip canceled. They had just broken the Sinai covenant. God had said openly, if I come among you, I'll consume you. I can't. And so here we are. The Lord had said, you need to sit here and wait, and we'll see what I'm going to do to you. Imagine living like that. Let's wait and see what I'm going to do to you. Well, we know what happened last time. The Levites had gone in with armed sword and exercised severe judgment on the nation, killing about 3,000, most likely the ringleaders of this insurrection and rebellion. But here's Israel. They have stripped themselves of the idolatry. The jewelry's off. They're no longer bowing to the calf. The calf's been pulverized. Moses had pulverized it and made them drink it. All the symbols of idolatry are gone. A stripped people stand in front of them now, an imagery of what will God do to them? Well, that leads us to where we are. Moses is really wrestling with that question. Moses is really wrestling. There's got to be a way. There's got to be. He had already offered himself as the atonement, remember? Blot me out of the book. I'll take it, Lord, for them. God said no. He couldn't. That's what we know from our own Heidelberg. No one can bear that. Moses is a sinner. Moses had offered himself, but he knows life without the Lord spells certain death. What good would it be to go through this life without him? I can't even process that thought. You've been so used to it. You've seen his power. You know it in the course of your lives. So Moses begins a serious time of prayer and intercession here that I hope you will really take to heart. Verse 12. Moses said to the Lord, "See, you say to me, 'Bring up this people,' but you've not let me know whom you will send with me." Moses is troubled at this point and begins by asking about the identity of the one whom he's sending. Remember, God said, "I'm not sending my angel, I'm sending an angel to go with you," back in verse 2. God was not going, but now this angel would just do the work. Moses is not really excited about this. In fact, this is really troubling him. It's as if Moses is saying, I really can't accept that. This is not what you promised. So what do you mean? Well, he's thinking a lot about back to the burning bush. And you'll remember the original promise at the burning bush when the Lord had called him and said something that really the heart of the Exodus is all about. What he said to Moses was, when Moses said, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh, that I should bring the children up out of Egypt? He said, I will certainly be with you. It's the whole point of the book. God dwelling with his people. He said it at the end of this section here in chapter 29, I believe it was. It's one of the most moving cries from God's servant because he begins to think about the promise here. He's really thinking about the promise, and he's wrestling with it, and it really does become a model for all of your prayers. I'm going to show you that, Lord willing. Moses is wrestling with law and gospel. Moses is wrestling with judgment and mercy. Moses is wrestling with sin and the consequences and other things. Moses would write in Psalm 90, they say one of the only Psalms that he penned. I'm curious if he penned Psalm 91, but as it goes, the only Psalm of Moses is Psalm 90, and we read, we have been consumed by your anger. You know that Psalm. By your wrath, we've been terrified. Our years, remember, 70, 80, and they're full of all this hardship, and he watched an entire generation die out in the wilderness. How does this work? Righteous wrath against sin and the problem of idolatry, and yet you've promised to be with us. How does that work? I know at some point, if you're a thinking Christian, you're going to be tormented by that question. You have to be. You have to be. I mean, don't look at Israel and say these stiff-necked people as if God's not holding up a mirror here. That's the intention of inspiring all of this. God's doing this to say these people are you. We run to idols all the time. If we didn't, the Bible wouldn't have to constantly command against it. End of 1 John, little children, keep yourselves from idols. That's a New Testament problem. And we drink from the lusts and idolatries. You know what you run to. You know when you're stressed. You know when you're worried. You know when you're trying to flee all the pressures of life, what you run to numb it, to dull it. It's an idol. And everyone here does it. When we do it, we're perplexed. The law has exposed us, and then you go through this feeling of real guilt. I don't have any power to get out of this. We do the things, Romans 7, we don't want to do. And you know the real discouragement that sets in at this point. The condemnation that we begin to go through is awful, isn't it? We go through this life and we have a hard time as believers with what really amounts to what we know is little progress, it seems. I mean, the framers of the Heidelberg knew when they said, even the holiest of this life only make a small beginning. You know the conflict that brings? Of course you do. Cloud hangs over the head. How can I be sure about anything if I'm in the midst of this conflict? We're doing the same stuff. What do you think the fight in church has been for pastors who want to reform worship? Worship! It's idolatry everywhere. We struggle. How do we figure this out? In the midst of what is often a sense of a real lack of victory and what it seems to be defeat, this lingering question looms over us, is God for us or against us? It doesn't really help when you come to the next chapter and you read verses like, which we don't like to read, I by no means clear the guilty. I punish to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, he said in the law. Second commandment, no images. That all makes matters worse, doesn't it? Makes matters much worse. He by no means clears the guilty. You have a God who can't look on sin. We've taken it all lightly. Who says to Israel at this particular moment, you just stand there. Let you know if I come among you, it's over. I'll consume you all. You just wait and see what I'll do to you. Not the God of American Christianity, it seems. How do you live and go forward in that? Israel feels it. This is why you preach sin and law, because what's brought out is mourning. The very thing that's needful. They've just seen the power of his anger, Psalm 90. We lived our days consumed by your fear, Psalm 90. And then you can't seem to figure out what he's doing. It's all so mysterious to us, isn't it? Even the great Moses is wrestling with the hard realities of life that directly involved with his struggle with how is God working? I don't get this. What is he doing? Why is he doing it? This is the passage. You ever felt that way? It's the scene of wilderness life. We're tried. We're tested. We suffer loss. We hurt. And we don't understand at times why God does what he does. It doesn't matter all the goodness that you've enjoyed. When you get to a moment like this, it's all eclipsed, isn't it? The present seems to indicate God is not with us. Didn't he say it to Israel? You see where Moses is? But Moses is thinking here. And Moses is thinking about things that have happened, and Moses is really reflecting on the past and what happened in his calling, and there was something else that God had said in the course of his dealing with Moses, a concept that has overtaken him. You haven't seen it yet in Exodus this way. One concept. You've said, Lord, you know me. There was something else you said. You have said, I know you by name. And look at verse 12. And you have also, I know you by name, and you have also found favor in my sight. I wish the ESV here had translated it as some of the older translations and just put grace. Grace, saturated right here. Now therefore I pray, if I have found grace in your sight. He keeps saying it. Show me now your way. Do you see that in verse 13? Please show me now your ways that I may know you in order to find grace in your sight. You see, Moses is really, really reflecting on something here that he knew. Remember back to how difficult Moses was? You forget about this. You think this great pillar who was such a righteous guy. This guy was a knucklehead at the beginning. Remember? You forgot. God almost killed him at one point. You forgot. In chapter 4, he refused to circumcise his son to give him the covenant sign. And God almost took him out. And the whole calling was just difficult. Excuse after excuse after excuse, so that the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. He even refused to go at one point. What a stubborn mule. What a stiff-necked man. But God didn't give up on him. You see, Moses is living and has lived Israel's experience. Moses begins to think, well, if it's possible, and I know from experience, God didn't give up on me. When I was at the brink of death, remember, Lord, that? I know what I was. You said that even though I was stiff-necked, you said, Moses, you stand, I know you by name because you found grace in my sight. Wait a minute. If grace is what it is, and grace was never earned, think of the logic and the reasoning going on in his head right now. If grace is what it is, if grace was never earned, in fact, if grace means you had a full knowledge of me, you saw what I did, you saw every stupid thing that I did all these same sins. If you're omniscient, well, you knew that about me before you even called me.
Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Call us toll free at 888-504-8805. That's 888-504-8805. Contact us through the web at agradio.org. That's agradio.org. We're on Facebook. Look for Abounding Grace Radio Ministry. Listen daily on this station and subscribe in iTunes or use our free Android app. We trust this program has encouraged you to trust in Christ for your standing with God and to live in His abounding grace.